Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Yo, look at this Sunday morning. You know, it's that time of year when things are going to be up and down. Just a brief word of warning: keep your eye on the weather. It's going to be fine for most things in your yard, but it's going to get colder towards the end of this week. It always does. We can always predict that, and it's one of the reasons why I encourage you when you plant things out. You need to go ahead and plant, no question. But on some things like tomatoes, which many of you have already planted, they're gonna encounter some pretty cold temperatures towards the end of this week. May not kill them outright, but it's going to make them very unhappy, very unhappy. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as the show goes on. We talk about that a lot here, and sometimes you pay attention. This is a good time to pay attention. We'll talk about that a little later. But, you know, it's also, it's a weekend of festivals. It's a weekend of food festivals. It's a weekend of plant festivals in a very interesting way. Palm Sunday. You know, there's that thing, palms. It's a very interesting thing about Palm Sunday because in much of the world, and this is maybe important to think about, in much of the world, there were no palms. So how are they going to celebrate Palm Sunday? Interesting problem. So Palm Sunday, in a lot of countries, got transferred into basically Spruce Sunday or some other plant Sunday. You know, and I think that's the way it should work. That's kind of the way it should work, kind of the way it has to. Here on the Gulf Coast and in all of Alabama, basically, we can do Palm Sunday. Just like with palms. And why were palms such a big deal? Well, you could go back and figure out that maybe they were evergreen and that they represented an oasis of a kind, and that they were pretty important in the Middle East, where all of this or all of these ideas developed. And but we can do palms for Palm Sunday. Isn't that cool? We got all kind of, and we don't have to import our palms. We got, I always like to remind folks, we got more native palms in Alabama than they got in California. We got a lot of native palms. They're all over the place. We have some imported palms as well. It's all kind of fun. It's fun to think about Palm Sunday. It's also the week of Passover. And there is a feast associated with Passover that is a reminder of what it's like to live in captivity and what it was like to be freed from that captivity. One of the things you did was to eat the bitter herbs to remind yourself what it was like to be a captive. One of those bitter herbs, it's amusing to me, one of the bitter herbs is lettuce. Now, you're going to say, lettuce is not bitter. Well, that's because you get it from the grocery store. But if you grow lettuce in your yard, if you grow it in your yard in a place like Mobile and you start harvesting it after the days get warm, even now, it's probably going to be pretty bitter. And you'll understand, yeah. You know, lettuce is fundamentally pretty bitter. And it may be those bitter qualities are something that some people cultivate. It's an interesting thing. Sort of like chicory, which is another bitter herb. And one of the reasons I think we find it along the roadsides in so much of the U.S. is it was so important to Passover rituals, chicory. On Dive, some people might say, if they're fancy, we just drink it in our coffee along the Gulf Coast. I don't know. I don't think that's kosher. And I don't think that quite serves the purpose of the bitter herb, but there's the chicory. There's the chicory that's part of it. And it's something we brought from Europe. It's a part of our tradition here. It's fun to think about all of those different things. What were all the bitter herbs? You know, one of the bitter herbs that we now celebrate at Passover as with horseradish and maybe a beet mixture was actually probably originally Queen Anne's lace. Wild carrot, which is what Queen Anne's lace is. And if you, it's bitter. There's no question. But it was a reminder. That's what it was originally. Not the heat of horseradish, which is a little more appetizing, but the bitterness of good old Queen Anne's lace would have been an interesting thing. Some of the others, Eryngium, I'd love to talk about Eryngo. We got all kind of Eryngos, and that was another one. And then South Thistle, another one of those bitter herbs. We now have it all over the place in the United States, perhaps in part because it was part of this ritual, this festival of this time of year, the spring festival. Yeah, well, it's food and plants become really important to the festivals this time of year, and it's maybe because it is the time when so many plants are emerging and so many things are good to eat. And we were just talking in the last hour about foraging and, you know, maybe going out in the woods. You don't need to go in the woods and forage. There's all kind of plants growing all around your house right now. And I could talk about the things that we find amusing, like poke salad, which we shouldn't find amusing because it's actually quite a good salad. Poke salad's coming up right now in your yard. So are chickweeds. Chickweeds are quite delicious. They're quite good. So are those little cling tights. What's the common name? The things that the whole stem will stick to your plant, sort of like it's velour. It's coming up right now. It's sticky. It's out there right now, and it's quite good. All of these are quite delicious things. There's even wild lettuce coming up. Now, I don't think that's kosher for whatever reasons that I don't quite understand, but wild lettuce is coming up too, and we have some beautiful wild lettuce. It's a native Florida lettuce. Wild lettuce is out there, and it can be cooked, and it can be eaten. There's quite a few things in the yard, and one of the things, I just heard a complaint that somebody mowed down, of all things, mowed down our wild onions, which, gosh, they're so good this time of year. They're so delicious. So one of the great traditions, because we haven't made it religious, because we're not that way. We're not religious in that way, I reckon, is the spring tonic. And along the Gulf Coast, we used to have spring tonics with all of these things in our yard, with the chickweeds and the cling tights and the, boy, go out and get a few of the native wild onions. Make a nice gumbo's herb, a gumbo of herbs, which seems like the kind of thing to do this time of year, isn't it? This is one of your last chances along the Gulf Coast to do that. Lots of great greens in your yard. And maybe one day, one day we'll have a religion of place, a religion that is based in where we are rather than a religion based in some other country that brings some other country's traditions and tries to fix them on us, tries to build them on us. But wouldn't it be nice if we could somehow celebrate our own festivals, our own liturgies based on our own seasons, what's happening in the yard? There's a lot happening out in the yard right now. Oh boy, one of the other things I could talk about, and it's happening all over, are the bumbling, buzzing bees. And I think we need to talk about the bumbling, buzzing bees that are covering your blueberries right now. And there is something to all that vibrating bees that we need to think about, because it makes one of the cool things is that those bees, which we'll talk about when we come back, understanding that our bees are really quite diverse compared to the bees that people knew in Europe, and that our bees, our native bees, the ones that make the real bzzz noise, we need to understand how important they are to what's going on in your garden right now. And we need to understand how many different plants, tomatoes, blueberries, Most New World plants are designed to be pollinated by our native bees, not by European honeybees. A good thing to think about. I've been watching them on the blueberries now. It's incredible. You know, I see some honeybees there. They're doing an okay job. They're stealing the nectar, but you know they're doing a terrible job of pollination. And you can see on the flowers why that is. The bumblebees, though, man, they are just, you just see them shake it loose. They are just shaking it loose. The bumbling of the bees. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Maybe talk about some more spring herbs as well. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
I was raised in the country, that's a natural fact. Food on the table from the garden out back. Everyone working to make the land their own. Red clay cracking where the silver queen grows.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. I'm getting excited by all the things coming up. I'm getting excited by the things that we may be able to eat. And I'm getting just right in the yard. If you have any questions about it, maybe you ought to call me. But it's fun to explore. It's fun to explore what's there. And while you're at it, look at the bees and look at the pollinators. Let's just put it that way. So here's what I saw. Can I tell you what I saw on my blueberry? Because we brought this up, and Jim in Georgetown brought this up, and I have to say, I'll say it again. I love honey. Ooh, boy. You know, it's just I grew up that way, and I just love honey. And I love good honey, and I hate store-bought honey. I got to say, store-bought honey is just terrible. And it's really horrible. I mean, it could, if I had to eat store-bought honey, I wouldn't eat honey. It's that bad. But good honey is great. I mean, it's delicious. I love honey. And honey is made by these things that we brought in from Europe that we call bees. And in fact, they are bees. They're European bees. And sometimes now they're also Africanized. So they're Africanized European bees sometimes, but European bees. For the most part, there may be a little bit of an Asian strain of bee in there, but they're all basically honeybees. But that's not the world of bees. The world of bees is huge. And the world of pollinators is much bigger than honeybees. And we read a lot about how important honeybees are as pollinators, but they're really not effective pollinators. They're really very poor pollinators. And in the East, with almost any plant you could have, bees are just the worst pollinators you could have. They don't do it very well. And it's because our plants didn't evolve with those kinds of bees. I mean, I think you could look at it that way. They didn't grow up with those kinds of bees, if you like. And so they don't really know what to make of all these honeybees and the way they do things. What they like, the things that they like that are doing things are the native bees. And native bees are really interesting. The native pollinators in general, I'm going to extend it to the native pollinators, because what I'm seeing on my blueberry, here's what I'm seeing. Well, honeybees, they're stealing the nectar. You can see how they're stealing the nectar. They don't do it from inside the flower. They get it outside the flower. And blueberries are set up, they have these little, if you ever looked at a blueberry bloom, they're so interesting. They're so cool. They have these little, they're kind of like little, a single leg of a pantaloon, I guess. Just as cool as it can be. And it's a bell that comes down and has a little lip that fringes out. But the pollen-bearing things, the things that distribute pollen, kind of hang out of the mouth. And what happens with a lot of blueberries is that these bumblebees, and they, you can see it with the bumblebees really well, they fly up to the flower, and they lay on the flower, and they just they bumble. It's that bumbling thing that bumblebees do. it's a noisy kind of thing, and it is just the perfect frequency to shake that pollen loose, and it does. And it shakes it onto the bumblebee's legs, and it carries it around to other plants for pollination. Very effective. The honeybee, if you watch the honeybee, doesn't do that very well. There's some other bees that are out there, too. Little tiny bees. These little euglossid bees. Tiny, and other bees with other names. They're tiny, tiny. You call them sweat bees. Well, they're really bees. And they're very small. They're very tiny. And they are probably the most efficient pollinators. And you'll see them out there. They're out there. They're cool. And they're getting inside the flower. They're really carrying pollen really well from one flower to another. Incredible. All these little tiny bees that you may have a dozen species easily in your yard, in addition to the bumblebees and the digger bees and all of those other bees that are out there that are a little bigger. And you know what else you're going to see? You're going to see moths. And even, which is not, I guess I'm not surprised, but moths are out there. They're out there too. And you'll see a moth going for those blueberries because they have long tongues. They can get in. They can all look around in those flowers really well. And so I saw hummingbird moths around the flowers. And it wasn't just honeybees. And maybe that's an important thing to know, is that the native bees are the important pollinators for us. Honeybees, I guess if you lived in California and you had nothing but almonds, miles and miles and miles of almonds, you'd probably do well to have some European honeybees, because that's what European honeybees grew up with. But here in Alabama, if you want pollination in your yard, you want those native bees, go out and take a look at them. They're out there right now in your garden. Hey, Abby, I wanted to say that about bees. Thanks for hanging on. I'm listening. Tell me what you got.
Good morning. So I sent you a couple of pictures. I have some planter bags in my backyard in Midtown, and I'm growing some beans, some bush beans. And I sent pictures of something that's kind of growing on the top of the soil that I'm concerned about.
Yeah. Well, hold on just a second. I'm going to look at those pictures. And so what happens? You're growing your beans in containers, right?
Well, they're bush beans. They're not pole beans. They're bush beans. So, yes, I was trying out these fabric container bags for the first time.
I see. So they're pretty good. You know, so here's what's happening. That's not too big of a problem.
Oh, good.
In those types of bags, and she's got, folks, just to let you know, she's growing her beans in big grow bags, which I think is a good way to do it. You know, I think beans are generally going to do better in the ground. But if I had to grow them in a container, I would grow them in these grow bags. They're pretty good. They're good about root pruning. You don't get root wrapping. It's really a nice kind of thing. And they drain well, which means you have to water them more, but that also means they don't rot in our very wet climate. Now, what's happened is, Abby, you've got a lot of organic matter in there, and that's a good thing. And it's been moist enough that organic matter is beginning to get a mold and break down. It doesn't look like any of the molds. There's lots of molds out there, lots of fungi out there that are very beneficial to plants and very beneficial to soil. There are some that are very destructive. This doesn't look like it's going to develop into a destructive one. But let me tell you how to avoid getting those destructive ones. I think having those kinds of pots are probably going to, you're probably going to avoid it. But water from the bottom as much as you can. And how do you do that? Take that bag, if possible, and put it in a tub or a tray that's got water in it, and let it soak the water up from the bottom.
Okay.
You can do that. That's the easiest way to do it. Well, maybe the easiest way. The other way to do it is to water three times. And so what you do is you water the plant decently. You walk away for a minute or two, maybe a few minutes. You come back, you water it again. And then you walk away for a few minutes and you come back and water it again. And that way, the water, I could give you all the reasons why it works. It's an old tip that that the ladies I used to work for when I was growing up and who scolded me because I never did anything right in their yards. But they always used to tell me, this is how you water. And they were right, and it works. It gets the water to the bottom of the pot rather than having it just sit at the top where it can develop, where you can are more likely to develop mold problems. When you water that three times that way, you'll have to water much, much less. Or you can water from the bottom by putting it in a container. But I think you're okay.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. So, boy, I got a lot of questions here I got to answer. Rodney, I'm listening. Tell me what's going on with the parsley.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, listen, I grew some parsley over the winter. And it's starting to stalk out. It's about 3 feet tall.
Yeah.
Am I going to be able to keep that parsley plant through the summer?
I woke up this morning dealing with that very same question. Because I love parsley.
I do.
And, I could talk about all the wonderful things I've been doing with it, but I got to take a break, and then I'm going to come back and answer your question. Rodney, can you hold on? Because we have to do this thing called taking a break.
Thank you.
We don't have to, but it's a good thing to do it. It means we can stay on the air.
Hotter weather in the country, hotter weather down south, hotter weather in the Delta, hotter food tastes in your mouth.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Moving to the country, I'm going to eat a lot of peaches.
Me a lot of peaches. I got a lot of short answers for a lot of good questions from Sam and from some other folks who sent in Beverly, who sent in pictures. Sam and Beverly there? Yeah, good. So we're going to get back to those. But we had a question, and it was a good question from Rodney. And it was about parsley. And I said, Rodney, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. So I said I woke up this morning worried about my parsley, too, because here's the thing. It's a biennial. That means that it takes 2 years to flower. But what that really means in our climate is that once it gets enough chilling during the winter, it feels like it's ready to start the second year. And so it starts the second year by doing what it does naturally, which is to flower. And when it flowers, it gets a little bitter. And I noticed I had some great pesto. I've been making great parsley pesto. If you've never made parsley pesto, it is one of the most delicious things. You just put it on you just make a little pesto with it. And I actually mix carrot tops with it. You put it on your pasta. It's just a meal in itself. It's delicious. It's wonderful. And I made
great.
It's delicious. And last night, it was a little bitter. And I thought, uh-oh, there it is. I've noticed that some varieties of parsley don't get bitter as quickly. And I'm experimenting with those. And I'm reluctant to say I am certain that they are less likely to get bitter in spring. But I'm experimenting with them. The other way to deal with this fact, because it's not the heat even, it's the fact that they went through a winter and they're now ready to flower. And so they are, and they're going to develop a little bit of bitterness. So even if you break the tops out of it, the plants are still going to be bitter. However, here's the remedy for that. Start some more parsley. So what I'm doing is starting parsley, starting my second crop of parsley in late January so that it will be ready to go out while it's still cool, and I'll get great parsley March, April, May, and into June. And And that's the way to remedy that. It's really hard to reduce the bitterness by simply pinching out the flowers, which you can do, and I've done. And sometimes it'll continue through the summer and may produce in the fall, but
yeah,
it's hard and it doesn't work well.
My plan was to cut the stalk off. You know, it puts a big stalk and then it flowers.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right.
All right,
and
I
that's
have a
right.
second question. Thank you for that. Cilantro. When should I be growing cilantro?
Yeah, great question. Two great questions. So cilantro, the thing you need to know about cilantro is that it's going to go to seed very quickly if the weather's warm and if the days are getting longer. It's going to go to seed, now bear with me, it's going to go to seed very slowly if the temperatures are cooling and the days are getting shorter. So if you were to plant cilantro in September, you might have that same clump of cilantro all winter long.
Well, I did, and mine just didn't do very well this year. It just healed over and died at one point in time and said, I'm tired.
So how long did it keep going? How long?
September would be probably the better time.
September. When did you plant it?
It was about September.
Yeah, yeah. And how long did it last before it healed over?
Probably to December, maybe. And it was growing fairly well at first, and then it just gave up and just went away.
Yeah.
And I had it planted close to my parsley, and parsley's doing great. You know, it's a big old bush, and it's doing well.
Yeah, so that was just one.
Didn't do anything.
That was just one plant or a bunch of plants that did
that? No, just one plant. I don't have a lot of garden. I've got limited space due to live oaks and what have you. My garden is 4 foot by 20 foot.
So I'm going to give you the official diagnosis on the cilantro. Stuff happens.
And yeah, stuff happens.
So here's what happened with the cilantro. I mean, there are times when you'll lose a plant, but normally if you had five plants, maybe one of them would have keeled over, as we say.
Yeah.
But the others would have done fine and would have kept going. And I think even with the cold temperatures this winter, most of them would have kept going through much of the winter. But I'd try it again next year. You did it about the right time. Everything went right. And you got, for any climate, getting October, November, and into December out of one plant, one cilantro plant, is pretty exceptional. They don't do that well in Boston. So you're doing well. And cilantro is not conventionally, it's not a cut and come again kind of plant, which is you don't cut it and it leaves out again. Most people just harvest the whole plant. But if you plant in September, you can do cut and come again through the whole winter, most winters. So
yeah,
I tried again
in
September.
This winter, didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, listen, last thing, and I'll let you go. A point of interest. We had all for the last 3 months, spice finches on my feeder. A lot of them, not just one or two, but a lot of spice finches. I thought that might interest you.
Yeah, so
it's an Asian species, and people get them out of their cages and what have you.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So, I get to tell a story. At one point, someone I lived with had birds, and I let those birds out without meaning to, and of course it was my punishment then to go looking for this parakeet, and surely I would find, and so I was required to put an ad in the newspaper, which I did, to say, please, if you see a parakeet, please let me know about it. And I thought, this is a shot in the dark. And man, the next day I started getting calls, repeated calls, not just from one person, but from multiple people saying,
wow,
I got a parakeet in the tree in my yard. Come get it. And I went to about 10 trees and none of them seemed to be the right parakeet, according to the expert. And I realized, man, this is a thing. These birds get out, and they are a problem. I hope the spice finch doesn't become a huge issue. Sometimes the coal will knock them back, but that's something to think about. Wow.
Well, they were here during at the end of the cold period and didn't seem to bother them. I think they come from Asia anyway. But I'd have 20 of them on my feeder at one time.
Wow.
And they stayed
that
for
is
three
amazing.
Months, and I still have a pair that eats off of my feeder. And I'm thinking, well, I might find a nest out here somewhere.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Well, I will look into this. That is very interesting. Had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't either until I saw one on my feeder, and I was like, oh, my goodness, what is that, you know? Because I'm an avid bird person, and I have three different feeders, and I make sure they have food all the time. But it was just an amazing thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you told me.
I'll let you go.
You too.
And thank you for the information.
Thank you, sir. Here's a study by Robert Duncan. The occurrence, breeding, expansion of the scaly-breasted Munia, otherwise known as spice finch, in northwest Florida from 1999 to 2017. So it's becoming a thing. Started in the Pensacola area where they first started noting them. Wow. And maybe not a good thing. We'll see. That's going to be interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of records in Mobile. Isn't that interesting? Interesting. Maybe worrisome. People are sending me pictures of some. In fact, the people who are sending me these pictures are also calling me. Beverly, are you there?
I am here.
All right. So I'm looking at these pictures.
Okay, so these trees are in low-lying wet areas. There are about, 10 to 15 of them. And that's where the blooms came from.
Yeah. I don't think they mean to be in low-lying wet areas. A lot of times, I think that's just kind of an accident of these trees. But usually they're in better drained places, but that's okay. I mean, they probably like a little bit of moisture. They're tongue oil trees.
Trees. Oh, okay. Are they native?
No. Alliurides 40i. So tongue oil was going to be a big industry along the Gulf Coast because, you know, in fact, it's going to be a big industry in Alabama. You know, Alabama can't think about more than one plant at a time, right?
Right.
If you did, it would be a violation of the law. So it was going to be cotton, or it was going to be corn, or it was going to be soybeans. And so at some point, people said, well, the next crop, or it was going to be, oh, let me say this out loud, it was going to be pot, CBD oil, hemp, whatever. It's all going to save us, and it never does. But during the 30s, I get about 20s and 30s, the thing that was going to save us was tongue oil trees. And tongue oil are pretty cool. I mean, they're cool trees. The tongue oil, I love tongue oil. It's one of the best things for woodworking you could ever have. I highly recommend it. I could talk all day about it, and you don't want me to. But tongue oil trees were planted in plantations across the South, big plantations of them, sort of like we plant pecan trees. And every now and then, one will get out. They're not hugely invasive like some of the other things, but a little invasive. And you'll see the big nuts rolling around on the ground in that same place if you come back later this summer, big old tongue oil nuts. But that's what it is.
Oh, okay. Well, that's wonderful. It's on 60 acres that borders our acreage. And those people, I think it was like they had a fruit and nut company back then in the 20s and 30s.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're probably the ones who planted them.
Yeah, that's probably the case. They probably did. Probably it was part of a production facility. The original trees may be gone, but the fruits, fall and roll around and start new trees. So that's probably what you're looking at.
Okay, well, what happened was the hurricane actually revealed them. They were surrounded by a lot of large trees.
Yeah, that's interesting. So a lot of Asian trees don't have the stature of our native trees, so they do they do benefit from having the canopy taken off, and they can become a little more aggressive and then prevent other trees from coming up underneath them. But I think in general, I think these tongue wall trees are probably pretty innocuous. I don't think they're going to cause any big, huge problems.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I also saw where I won the contest this week.
You did. I should say this. So we should say this right now. Folks, Beverly won the contest. And we're going to come back and talk about what that means okay. As soon as I come back.
Thank you very much for your information.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I declare I ain't going to pick no baby. Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I'll get down on your bended knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Whistle out enough and you can't hear it. Is that the secret? Thank you, Leanna. That was enough. So we're back. We got a bunch of questions, and they're fun questions, and I'm going to try to get to all of them. A lot of great pictures of native azaleas that are blooming really well. Wayne says he wonders if the cool temperature has made a difference. You know, it can. It certainly can. It stabilizes the blooms. All the blooms tend to open at once. And, yeah, I do think it's better when we have not necessarily super cold but consistently cool temperatures. I think a lot of things do better. Alabama? Al sent me a picture of a magnolia. That's a magnolia, by the way. Michelia, banana shrub, which is a type of I think it's now in the magnolia genus. It has little white spots on the leaves. Those white spots are scale. They're magnolia scale, more than likely. Makes sense, right? And they are a little bit of a problem. And they may be worse on the bottom sides of the leaves. They are insects. If you will spray with a horticultural oil, you'll just about eliminate those. And a horticultural oil, it's often sold under the name of All Seasons, and you put it in a little pump-up sprayer, and you spray on the undersides of the leaves as well as on the top. The undersides is probably more important than spraying on the top. And it will just about eliminate all of that. You don't have a really bad infestation. It can get worse. At times it can get worse. But it's a scale insect is what that is. So if you want to have more questions about that. So who was it that sent me a picture of a tomato? But the tomato, Billy Bob, was that you? It was. So what's happening is his tomato is getting these white spots on the leaves. And a lot of you may see that happening. There are a couple of reasons, but the biggest reason is probably, we're going to call it sun scald. I suspect that's what happened here. Billy Bob, you can tell me differently, that maybe the plant was not getting quite as much sunlight as it is now. And so it had not developed with exposure to sun, some people's skin gets a little darker, which makes them less vulnerable to sunburn. And that's what happens with tomatoes. They develop a sort of a resistance to these intense UV rays that they experience under the sun with gradual exposure to sun. But if you take them from a fairly dark place and you put them in a fairly sunny place, sometimes they'll get sun scald. I think that's what's happened. It should grow out of it, but it's gonna look a little ragged for a while. Some of those leaves may not do so well, But that's sun scald. And one of the ways to do that is to gradually acclimate your plants to full sunlight. But I think you'll be okay. I think you could be okay. Josh sent me incredible pictures. So there are two varieties. One is, let's see here. It looks like one, yeah, so you got a lot of varieties going on there, Josh. And one of them looks like what we call Red Formosa, which we talked about a little bit last week. It really is a distinctly strong reddish purple. I described it as being Velvet Elvis purple. Is that fair? It's really purple. It's like the kind of purple you would envision lining Dracula's coffin. It's reddish purple. Deep reddish purple. Spooky reddish purple. Red Formosa. I'm pretty sure that's what we're looking at with that. Let me talk about the winner here. We have a winner. Beverly is the winner. Beverly talked to us earlier about Alyuretes 40i, which is otherwise known as tongue oil tree, and we talked a little bit about why that is. But Beverly also got really interested in what's happening with the pines right now. And if you look at pines, they do flower. Pines grew up, that's the language we use to not offend people, I suppose. Pines grew up in a time period when before flowering plants were common. Maybe before flowering plants at all. And so they have a very distinctive cone-like structure that functions like a flower, but isn't like a typical flower. It doesn't have the petals and all that stuff that typical flowers have. But it flowers, and the cone is the result of that flowering, if you will. And so what we're looking at are both the stamen, the male bearing catkins, I believe they're called on a pine. Maybe I think that's what they're called. I'll think about that. And the receptor, which we can call the female portion, growing up in the center where there will be pine cones eventually. And it's this cool flower. She sent the picture. Let me get to the point. She sent the picture to our Facebook contest, FM Talk 106.5. We have a Facebook contest. And she sent the picture in, and folks said, man, that's cool. And they judged it the best picture of the week. And Beverly, as a consequence, won a poster on special stock that Sean himself picked out. So you know it's got to be good. It's special stock that has the Wonder Wheel on it. And it means you get a sort of a permanent calendar of when to plant along the Gulf Coast. It's a very useful thing. If you happen to be a winter and you live, say 50 or 75 miles north of the Gulf Coast, you call me and we'll 75 miles north of the Gulf Coast, and we'll talk about how to apply that calendar to where you live too. But it's a really cool thing, and Beverly won it this week. You can try it next week by sending your pictures to Facebook. The pretty pictures. Interesting pictures, pictures that people vote for, and you can win that contest. Now, if you've got other pictures that you want to ask questions about, you just send it right to me. Just text it to me, and we got another hour to explore what those pictures are about. 251-343-0106. Send me your questions. Send me your pictures. Send me your azalea that lines Dracula's coffin.
My girl, don't lie to me.
It's Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. Lots of fun things to talk about here. And we're going to talk about your yard. There's one important number you need to remember now. If you want to ask a question, 251-343-0106. Now, there are two ways to ask a question. You can call that number, and I highly recommend that. That way we get to talk. But you can also send me a photo by texting that number, 251-343-0106. And if you live on the Gulf Coast, all you need is a 343-0106 if you live right around Mobile. If you live in this in that area code, and so text me your photos, and we can and that sometimes helps us to answer questions better because we can see what we're talking about. We can definitely see what we're talking about, and sometimes I just get to enjoy your photos. So Sean keeps sending me incredible pictures of his peas. They do look good. Boy, they look good. My peas aren't doing so well. I think of the voles. I got a vole problem. I think I know how to fix it, but it's going to be a little bit of a pain. The Koromo Shikibu looks absolutely incredible. Koromo Shikibu, one of the great little azaleas that does really well along the Gulf Coast. Looks beautiful, doesn't it? Really cool-looking thing. Japanese azalea. Alicia, I wanted to... Alicia, I love the little poster that Sean's got you putting up. It's a nice little poster, isn't it, that says you won the picture of the week, and it has a picture of me when I actually had color in my beard. Yes, there was color besides pure white in my beard. And that picture is from, I don't know. I didn't look any worse then than I do now, but it's from a while back. So she got the poster up, but more importantly, she has a big picture of a Lady Banks rose that is doing quite well. It's beautiful. It's in full bloom now, and she wants to know how to prune it. And the first question I got to ask is, why? Why would you prune that? I mean, there's nothing to prune. And one of the nice things about Lady Banks roses is if you put it in a place where it can show off, as you have done, you may never have to prune it. If it gets some dead stuff in it, you can prune it out. If you're going to prune a Lady Banks, though I don't know why you would. I mean, I got to say, plants don't enjoy being pruned for the most part. There's nothing, you know, when whoever it was that invented plants went out there, I mean, he didn't go out and prune them all the time, right? Just let them go. They self-pruned. They were pruned by their growing among other trees. That helps. But when we prune, it's not always to improve the health of a plant. And roses, we prune them to kind of keep them in bounds for the most part. But Lady Banks, it's just not a really good way to prune. I don't even know how to tell you how to prune something like that, except prune out dead wood. If you're going to prune, and you're going to prune out any living wood, be sure to do it as soon as it's through blooming. Because it needs the year's growth. What happens in the coming year is what will bloom next year. So if you prune it in July, just like pruning azaleas, you're going to wipe it out. You're going to wipe it out. All the blooms, that is. So, but here's what I'd say. I don't know why you're going to prune. I don't think you need to prune. And I'm not smart enough to tell you how to prune it because it looks good. I don't know how to make it better. There it is. Ed, are you still there? I'm listening.
Yeah, I got this grass I sent you two pictures of. And it just started up in my yard this year, and it comes in clumps.
I see
what it looks like.
Yeah. So let me go back and look at that and see. Yes, there you are. I'm sorry. I got a bunch of questions in and I skipped that one. You know what that looks like? Did it get green during the winter? Pretty green during the winter?
Yes.
Yeah. And nothing else was green?
No, not too much. It was still winter.
Yeah. I mean, none of the other grass is green. So here's what I think that is. I think it's a fescue. Are one of the fescue relatives. I'm not sure. It could be Yeah, it's looking a whole lot like a fescue with that wide, wide blade. So, particularly if it was evergreen during winter, I'm going to call it a fescue. Now, what is a fescue worth? Nothing. I don't think it's going to be a problem in your yard because it's going to die back as soon as it gets warm. Thank goodness. Because if it survived, it could be a real obnoxious thing. One of the ways to control fescue, and I would recommend that people do control fescue, and I could go on about fescue for an hour, but I'm not going to do it, I promise. Fescue, it's just mow it in winter, and it won't get so rangy looking. And mow it now,
okay?
If you like, but I'm pretty sure that's fescue.
Okay. I'm glad it's going to die out anyway.
Yeah. It's definitely a winter. It's definitely one of the winter grasses. I guess it could be a lilium, like a, fescue is a lilium, but like a rye. It could be one of the ryes, but this one looks a little bit more like fescue than a typical rye. But it's a winter grass. It's going to die out, I guarantee you, by the end of April and May. And if it looks a little ragged right now, you just run your mower over it.
Great. I'll take care of that tomorrow.
All right. Good.
Thank you, Jeff.
Ed, good to hear from you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Let's see here. Boy, I got a lot of questions that came in. Did I miss anybody? If I missed anybody, because I almost missed Ed. Look, you know, and if you send me something and I don't respond, give me about 15 or 20 minutes. But if I don't respond, you just say, hey. You tap me on the shoulder and say, hey, you didn't respond. And I'll try to get to it. Sometimes I get a lot of questions coming in. Planted a kumquat in the first week of November, Scott says. It survived the winter, is now about 4.5 feet high and budding new growth. Should I prune the sucker growth off the trunk near the ground? Yes, sir, Scott. Let me tell you. Anything that develops within the first 6 inches, just prune it off. More than likely, I would guess that it is a grafted plant, and the graft, what's happening below the graft, is not something you want to keep. Even if it's not grafted, those first 6 inches of growth, you wouldn't want them really. It's just not useful. Leave a little bit of collar. Don't cut it back into the trunk. So you want to have a little knot coming out from the trunk. There's a little bump where that stem that's coming out is attached. You want to leave the little bump. You don't want to cut into the trunk, okay? But just go ahead and cut those off. I think you'll be just fine. And Scott, if you're having any, if it's worrying you just a little bit, you can send me a picture of it. Make sure it's in focus, and we'll think about it and look at it a little more carefully and make sure you're doing it just right. But I think it's safe to say that in those first 6 inches, if it's either coming from a graft, you don't want it for sure. Even if it's not coming from a graft, it's not going to be very useful. It's not going to be very pretty even. So let's go ahead and cut that off. It took down a giant ancient water oak out the kitchen window in Oakley this week. I need shade and something attractive to look at. What do you recommend? A Japanese magnolia could be just fine. A persimmon could be really good if you're getting enough sunlight. A silver bell could work there. You could do a fringe tree. But since Japanese magnolia came to mind to you, it sounds to me like you kind of like them. And ain't nothing wrong with a Japanese magnolia. Find you a nice variety. Shop around a little bit. Get you a good one. Looks like a pretty cool spot for one. Could be really nice. I think that'll work really well. And they'll grow. A lot of them can grow reasonably fast, particularly if you can find some of the older hybrids whose names I'll remember here in just a minute. We'll come back to that, and I'll tell you what they are. Valerie's got three large bags of gum tree mulch. So, gum tree mulch. I'm not sure. I got to think about what that means. But it's not going to leach nitrogen from the soil if you apply it right. We'll talk about that when we come back, okay?
You can take all the tea in China, put it in a big brown bag.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. You know, there are some people who've been listening to me long enough to know how distracted I get, and they're kind enough to remind me, hey, you said you were going to talk about this, and you didn't talk about it, and Ellen did that. And that was good. So now I need to talk about what I said I was going to talk about earlier, and some of you need to pay attention. If you've planted your tomatoes out, I always warn, you know, it's you got to plant them out, but there's a good chance that we're going to get a little cold spell, and indeed we are. And let me tell you about this cold spell, at least what I know about. I mean, I'm not omniscient. I'm basing this on what the National Weather Service is telling us, that we are going to see pretty strong northwest winds coming in later this week. It's going to be pretty strong tonight, actually. North wind around 10 miles per hour, low around 49. That is not going to be, that's not going to make tomatoes happy. That is not going to make tomatoes happy, folks. And then it's going to get worse later this week, where we're going to see definitely temperatures in the low 40s. And there are two nights, one with wind with temperatures in the low 40s, and then the next night probably no wind and a low maybe even in the 30s. And a lot of radiational cooling is what I'm anticipating. Let me not go into gory detail, but just say, tomatoes don't like that. They don't like it. Now, it doesn't mean you shouldn't have planted. You should plant, but it does mean you need to help your tomatoes, and it's pretty easy this time of year. The first thing you can do is put up a screen to block that north wind. That makes a huge amount of difference, particularly with the wind coming up today, if you can find some way to screen that wind. So how could you do that? You know, just get a tarp and put up a couple of sticks and tie the tarp to it so that it doesn't blow over, and at least block the wind that way on your tomatoes. That's one thing you could do. It'd be very simple. Now, don't put it on the south side. You put it on the north side of your tomatoes, right? And that will help a lot. There's some other things you can do. One thing that I think we may have a picture of, I hope we do, and if anybody wants to send in a picture to Facebook of how you've done it. If you have a tomato cage, you know what I'm talking about? Tomato cage that your tomato grows inside of? And let's say it's, you know, whatever it's made out of, and let's hope it's big enough. You can wrap that tomato cage with something like, if you've got clear plastic, if it's plastic that doesn't breathe, just put it on the backside or cover it about not quite three quarters, about two thirds of the way around. That's one way of doing it. That'll make a lot of difference. Blocks the wind, also keeps in heat, traps heat a little bit. You can wrap, do that. If you've got some frost cloth, which is a very nice thing to have, that gets a lot, that sun goes through really well, you can wrap the whole cage with that. Just wrap it all the way around, and those tomatoes will love it. And maybe you only need to do it for maybe a week or two. While we got these cold winds coming through, the tomato will do really well, and that's it. So do I think you need to cover? Yeah, and it's going to be the wind as much as it is the cold, but it's going to be a combination of the two, and they're going to be a problem later this week, and your tomatoes will not be happy. Will they survive? Yes, probably. Will they survive well? That's another question. It may slow them down a lot. It may even stress them to the point that they never really quite produce the way they should. So there it is. Let's see. Looks like a little lotus. I'm going to look it up and make sure that that's Lotus Wayne. Let me take another look. How does one make poke salad? Now, this is the thing. Poke salad has some, like a lot of plants, like taro and some other plants. You want to cook it in a couple of changes of water. And that's what my grandmother did, my great-grandmother did, and that's how she made poke salad. It needs to be cooked in two or three changes of water. So you boil it, pour the water off, boil it, pour the water off, boil it, pour the water off. Maybe you think that's too much trouble. I don't know. But that's how poke salad's made, and it's pretty good once you do that. If you don't do that, you're going to end up with some pretty bitter and a kind of a tingly sensation in your mouth that you're not going to like a lot. So it takes special cooking that way. The other thing, ideally, Tim, is you want to pick the poke before it stalks up. Once it starts stalking up, producing a big stalk, yeah, it begins to concentrate some of those chemicals that are not quite as good. So you want to pick it young. Yours is stalking up pretty good. So I'm not sure I'd tell you, yeah, don't go there. Just let that one fruit. And next spring you'll know to pick your poke salad just a little bit earlier before it starts stalking up. Because you got to pick it early on the Gulf Coast. Josh, is that you with the garlic bulbs? I think it is. Yes, and I thanks for jumping back on me on this. So Josh is I don't know which varieties of garlic you got, Josh. You can text me that real quickly. But they are starting to produce a new bit of growth, and it looks like there might be some bulb splitting going on. Blossom and lotus, okay. Chinese garlics, sometimes if it stays wet, and I can tell it's pretty wet there because I could see the hydrocotyl coming up. If it stays a little bit too wet, sometimes the bulbs will start splitting, and if it's a funky spring. So you may be seeing some bulb splitting going on there, and it may be time to pull those. If you're lucky, it's just a flower stalk coming up, but I don't think it is. I think we're starting to see some bulb splitting, and that can happen under wet conditions and under flaky spring conditions sometimes. Feel underneath, feel the bulb, and if it looks like it's developing pretty well, but you're beginning to see it beginning to get kind of patchy, like the skin is splitting, you might want to go ahead and pull about half of those, let them dry out, and do it before it gets too much wetter. so just pull a few and let's look at them. In fact, Josh, here's the other thing. If you want to pull one and let's sample it now, one that's beginning to get those little extra sprouts at the top, these little thin leaves at the top, and if you want to pull it now and send me a picture of it, we'll try to assess, but it looks like you might have some bulb splitting going on, and you might want to go ahead and pull them, because I don't think you're going to get a lot more of a lot better harvest out of it at this point. Give me top two or three choices for cherry sized tomatoes. There's so many of them out there. There ain't nothing wrong with black cherry. It's a great little tomato. Does great. It's wonderful. Less prolific than some, but it's early. It's got a good flavor. A lot of people really like it. Black cherry is a great little tomato. There's one that a lot of us have grown that has done really well, called Mexico Midget. Did really well. Jim in Georgetown, what's that other one that I'm forgetting that you like so much that I think I've recommended before? Jim in Georgetown will send me a message. I think Greg may be growing it too. But it's a smaller one. It's one of the smaller cherries that has done real well. It's very similar to Mexico Midget. Some people kind of like Mexico Midget better, and some people like the other one better. That's just three of I love the old Veracruz tomato called Coyote. It's a great little tomato. It tends to split a little bit, but it's really prolific. Has an incredible flavor, incredibly prolific. and pretty humidity tolerant. Pretty humidity tolerant. A lot of people like what's that gold cherry? Sun gold is very popular. I'm trying some of the Sun Gold is a hybrid, but it's a great hybrid. It has a few little problems. Fruit tends to split when it gets too wet, but it's a great little tomato, wonderful tomato. Should I keep going? There's some of the I'm experimenting with some of the Sun Drop descendants, like Honey. I think it's called Honey Drop Cherry. I think is what they call it, Honey Drop Cherry. And I thought it did really well too. One of my favorites, and it's harder to find, is Puerto Cortez. Puerto Cortez, incredibly prolific, great flavor. Really a rugged old tomato. It basically is, it's just a step up from being wild, but it's a step up from a wild tomato. It's a great little tomato, delicious. Puerto Cortez, I love it. So there it is. Matt's Wild. Thank you, Jim. Matt's Wild Cherry. Whew, boy, glad you were listening, Jim. Couldn't remember. Matt's Wild Cherry is another good cherry. All right. Hey, we're going to be back. Help thinking about the times. You are a wife of mine. You ask to please me. Good black eye please me.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Rain, rain on my face.
I'm ready, ready. Let's get back to these questions, because, you know, I want to clarify something on tomatoes real quick. Bill, hold on, because I want to do this real quick. There's several things we want to do. If you were to take a tarp, for example, and just block the wind off the tomatoes up to a height of about 3 to maybe 3.5, 4 feet above the around the tomato at this stage, it can make a lot of difference. And if you have you can take that tarp. And if you're good about it, you can build a little. It should be simple to build a couple of sticks, you know, 4 sticks to a tomato, and just pull that tarp over if the night gets cold. And that's going to be a lot of protection. Don't do it during the day, but you want to block that wind during the day from the back. And then you just take that tarp and fold it over, even if it's not a clear tarp. One simple way to do it during the night when it's colder. And that can help a lot. Clear plastic on the back ain't useful, just by the way. I mean, it helps to block the wind, but it doesn't really, no sun's coming through back there, so it doesn't matter what you put on the back, just you want to block the wind. If you, and then maybe you can pull it over during the night to keep those temperatures up. That's one way to do it. And then I got to give varieties of Japanese magnolias, which I'm going to do here in just a minute. But Bill, I better do this. Bill, you've been very patient. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to thank you. Last week, a fellow called in about eating his radish greens, and I tell you, I had some Japanese radishes, the big white ones, daikons, and yeah. They didn't develop a good root, and all of a sudden, you know, they got these beautiful flowers and buds, and I tried them. They're delicious. And
they're delicious, aren't they?
The collards. The collard buds and flowers are just fabulous. And you mentioned that last week, and I'll tell you what, that's a whole new crop for me, because I was about to pull these collards out of the ground. But, you know, I'm eating them now.
Yeah, it's like collard broccoli, right? And you know, Bill, thank you, because nobody believes me when I say that. And they believe you, but they don't believe me when I say that.
The buds, I picked a bunch of them and sprinkled them through a salad, and they're spicy and pungent. And I'll tell you what, they were a nice kick to the salad.
Yeah, they're great. They're wonderful. Yeah. I had some last night. And it's along with some collard flowers, just like you did, and it's just they're delicious. And it was in a salad. And you can cook them just like you cook broccoli. Don't cook them too much; they don't need as much cooking as most broccoli does. But it's great, and it's You know, it's all Rob, if you will. It's all just these beautiful flowers that you eat, just like broccoli in spring.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I try to get them now when they're in the bud stage, and I eat them raw. They are just really fabulous.
Yep.
Well, that's and the other thing, you mentioned you had a vole problem. I called in a long time ago about using castor oil for my moles and things like that, and I got something in the yard, too. It's throwing a mound, which I originally thought was ants, but it's not. And I just fixed some castor oil, and I spread it around the area, and it works. It's been working really good for me.
Well, good. So maybe that's what I need to do. I am going to, you know, you can with voles, you can actually trap them using mouse traps and peanut butter, and that probably will work pretty well. But I may resort to castor oil before it's all done.
Yeah, and I would, you know, my original thing is I bought organic castor oil from Amazon, and I'll tell you what, you can save yourself a bunch of money. Just go down to Walmart and get it, and it's only a couple of bucks a bottle. So.
That's right. That's right.
Watch my earpiece.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure organic castor oil makes much sense, actually. But I'm sure somebody's growing it, and we'll sell it to you. Yeah, just castor oil is going to be castor oil, and nothing much eats it, so it's not like it's really hard to grow organically anyway, so most of it's probably...
Yeah.
Yeah, well, of course, it is toxic, and we need to tell people castor oil is toxic, or at least castor beans can be toxic.
Yeah.
And so castor oil is not toxic, not quite nearly as toxic, though it just makes you think it is if you ever drink it. So
listening to the stories of the kids, what people that were kids in the 20s and 30s, like my dad, and they talk about they used to have a teaspoon or a tablespoon of castor oil every day, and they just hated it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's terrible. It's horrible. So you don't want to eat it. But it's, you know, and that's why the voles leave, because they don't want to have to take it every day either. So yeah. So there it is. There it is. Well, hey, Bill, this is so good. I'm so glad you testified to the deliciousness of flowers this time of year.
Yeah, I'm picking some right now.
All right, good. Hey, when those radishes actually produce the little flower, their flower is quite edible too. The stem will be a little tougher, but the flowers are beautiful. Some of those flowers are really beautiful.
Yeah, I'm looking at mostly white with purple, and these are the daikons, by the way. And they're gorgeous. They're pretty.
They're gorgeous. All right. Hey, Bill, thank you. That was great.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. So, Gene, I'm listening. Let's talk about your worms.
Yes. Come in yesterday afternoon. I got one little old plant out there that I got some tomatoes growing on. We'll have. And a little cherry tomatoes. My wife likes picking them coming in the house. Anyway, it was about 10 or 12, some kind of worms, about 2 inches long, and it had like a kind of a bright orange stripe running down. Do you have an idea what we're dealing with?
The worms are orange. Describe them to me one more time, Gene.
They're just a regular worm, kind of a brownish kind of worm. It had kind of like an orange stripe down the back.
Yeah. So reddish orange. I'm thinking, and you were seeing these around the. Were they a dull brown, or were they and kind of fat, or were they more slender and kind of a greenish brown?
They were slender, but they wasn't a greenish brown. It was kind of a mauve color brown, you know. Didn't have a lot of color to them, but they were getting on the buckets. I got some buckets in there, and I sprayed them with some stuff you kill insects on roses with, and they went away. I should have kept some of them, see what they looked like, but I would have died or what it went. But there wasn't seem to be my tomatoes. There was one up there, but he wasn't eating the tomato. He was looking around.
Yeah. So what are the problems? One of the worms that we have this time of year, and they do minor damage. They can hurt young plants more. Is army worms, and I think what you're looking at is army worms. Particularly if you saw more than one, and if they're not particularly fat, if they're, I think what you're describing to me is an army worm, and more likely southern army worm, and they'll come from the grass. They'll move from grass into garden beds quite a lot. One of the things, if you've got a lot of them, Gene, use something called BT, Dipel or Thuricide. It's sold as Dipel or Thuricide at the pesticide store.
Whoever's selling. Where Phillips somewhere gets a.
Yeah, that's right. Dipel or Thuricide, Phillips will have it. Any of the local places will have it. Abilene will have it. And mix it up and spray it around those plants. You'll probably want to do that. You'll do it about every 5 days.
Well, this thing has been up on the porch. It's not out on the ground at all, so the 5 gallon bucket. I've never seen them. I looked it up online, but everything I could find online was talking about fall army worms. But there must be about 10,000 different army worms out there.
Oh, there's a bunch of army worms. I mean, we live in a really diverse part of the world, so we got all kinds. We got beet army worms, we got southern army worms, we got the fall army worms. We got all kind of army worms.
There's a dead army worms this morning because I couldn't
find That's right.
I only got that one other plant because my wife comes in when they're blooming and eats them going in the house. So she likes them out there. They're right in the sunshine and warm and everything. So
Anyway. So they're not even going to be a huge problem on those plants if they're in pots. They're going to be fine.
Yeah. All right. Well, I never seen them before. I heard of army worms, but I never seen them around my house. But anyway, that's probably what this is. So they didn't look like they're tearing it up. So.
Yeah. I think that's what it
is. That's all I need. I hear the guy called in. I had called you about. He knows radish leaves. He got him a new dish now, hadn't he?
Yeah, that's right. And the flowers, Gene. The flowers are delicious. You got to try it.
I'm gonna do
it's
it.
Good.
I had already pulled mine up, but I'm gonna try it next year.
All right. Good. Thank you. So, Valerie, this gum tree mulch, I'm not sure what a gum tree is exactly. I know there are gum trees. There's red gum trees. There's black gum trees. There's sweet gum trees, which are sort of the same things as red gums. And then there's the Australian gums, which surely I don't know. And is the mulch from leaves? Or is it leaves? Describe them to me, Valerie. But here's the thing. It's not gonna draw nitrogen from the soil. As long as you don't dig it in. If you dig it in, then a couple of weird things happen, and then it can scavenge some nitrogen from the soil. It eventually puts it back. But meanwhile, your plants do that well. But if you just leave it on the top, it doesn't happen. Doesn't happen at all. You're fine. Just leave it on the top and don't till it in. How's that? Good. I hope I answered it correct, right. I hope that's good. How am I cooking these flowers, Dan? By the way, Dan recommends Dr. Carolyn as another wild tomato, and I haven't grown that one. But Dan knows what he's doing. How am I cooking these flowers? So mustard green flowers, you know, Dan, here's the thing. They don't need to be cooked much at all. Or you lose the quality of them. And you want that little bit of pungency with those mustard flowers. You can eat them right in the salad. If you're gonna cook them, stir fry them real quickly in a pan, real quickly stir fry them. Don't cook them too long. Don't cook them too long, and they don't even need to be blanched like some broccolis need to be. Don't blanch them, do anything. Just stir fry them lightly. You could do it in olive oil. You could do it in butter. Does that help? And there we go. And let's see. What else am I? Am I getting to everybody? Oh, Japanese magnolias. Gresham hybrids. I'm going to come back and say it as soon as the break's over again. Gresham hybrids.
Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Let me, Holly and Randy, if you want to call me back about this next week when we have more time to talk about it, you can easily propagate that as a, but you got to clean out all that junk around it. And no matter what you do, you got to pull some, just at least cut it back. And then let's call back next week and let's talk about it. You better call me because you got to, I don't want to say this out loud, but you know it. You got a mess there. I know why it's a mess, because it's got wisteria and all that kind of stuff in it. But let's talk about how to control that long enough to get this azalea propagated. It's cool looking azalea. We'll figure it out. Shredded wood, Valerie. That's gonna be fine. I'm curious. Gum tree? It must be Australian gum. I don't know. Where'd you get it? That's weird. But it'll be fine. Just don't dig it in. Patrick, best way to leave your tomatoes in a cold snap? I'm listening while you're not in town. Tell me how you're set up, Patrick.
Well, I've been putting a bucket on top of them, and then when it warms up the next morning, I take it off.
That's right.
But if I'm going to be out of town and it's going to be cold, what do I do?
Yeah. So there are two things that you can buy, and they make it really easy. One is to buy frost cloth that it's only rated down to about 28 degrees. That's all you really need. They call it frost cloth. You can buy it in bolts. It's not that expensive. You might be able to buy it off the internet, though you're running out of time to do that. And wrap it. And if you've got it in a cage, you just wrap the entire cage. The light shines through. You leave the top open, and the excess heat escapes through the top, but it keeps it plenty warm during these kinds of episodes. You'll be fine. That's one way to do it. Second way to do it is to get a wall of water. If you've never seen one, they're really cool. It's kind of a cone. You fill up the sides of it with water, and it'll protect that plant down to 20 degrees. Amazing. And you don't want to leave it on forever, but while you're out of town, it's one way to do it. You know you're going to be able to manage it just fine. So that's two ways of doing it. Now, you don't have any of those things in hand, I would bet. So right. I got to figure out what you do have around. Here's what I would do at least. Have you got cages around your tomatoes yet?
No, but I can put them there. What I've got is a real heavy tarp on the north and west side.
Yeah.
But I can put my cages there if I need to.
Yeah. No, so you're okay. You got a good heavy tarp. That'll really help a lot. If you've got a tarp that has a reflective side, that could be really neat. That actually helps the plants a little bit too. I'm trying to think what else you might have on hand that would work. You could put a piece of plastic. You could put a piece of clear plastic over the top, but not down the front side.
Mm-hmm.
While you're gone. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, just to like keep the frost from directly overhead.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Don't let it touch the plant, but just kind of perch it up over the top of it. And you remember, these are going to be very windy, so you got to do that. But that would be one way of doing it, and that would probably protect you through any frost that we would have likely to have this week, and it'll keep them extra warm too. Plus, they'll get the extra light that they're going to need. The sun's getting high enough now that you can't just have the light from the side; you need it from overhead. But that would be what I would do. And listen, next year, look into some frost cloths or walls of water, because if you got them on hand, they're so easy to use. And they're just amazing. They make an amazing difference.
All right. Do you know, is there anywhere I can buy that frost cloth?
Yeah, you might call A Bloom and see if they have it. They may have it. Some of the local places, on both sides of the bay that sell plants, Old Time Feed and Seed, A Bloom, see if they have it. I don't think you'll find it at any of the big box stores, but A Bloom may have it.
Okay. All right.
All right. Good to talk to you, Patrick.
Hey, you too.
Hope it works out. Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, Magnolias, before I lose out here, magnolias, the Gresham hybrids, if you want a big one that casts a lot of shade fast, Gresham hybrids grow really fast. And look for some of the Gresham hybrids. Now, I don't know where you're going to go shopping, but and there are a lot of different Gresham hybrids out there. But if you can find any of the old Gresham hybrids, next week I'll try to give you a full list of I'll try to see who's got Gresham hybrids and figure out how to get some to you. You may be able to get them through the botanical gardens. How is that? So it's going to take a while because I've got to coordinate people, and that takes time. Tara, we actually have some a little bit of time.
Oh, good.
I'm listening.
Well, I have been very equivocal, equivocating. One day I decide I will, then next day I decide, nah, I better not. You know, it's like on a couple of different things. I'm wondering if this cool, unexpected lake cool will actually help me in some way. Carrots, I'd like to try carrots. I'm going to do them in a container, but very large container, tree size, tree plant size container. So, I'd also like to go ahead and do some dill, cilantro, and parsley. It, you know, are we going to have enough cold to actually make it worth trying that?
Parsley's great. Do the parsley. Parsley will do great. It's going to take forever for it to germinate, but yeah. you'll still get good parsley even into June. Cilantro takes a while to germinate too, but you'll probably get a little bit of a crop before it goes to seed. But cilantro is not so much the heat as it is the lengthening days. It just makes it want to go to flower. Carrots, don't do them now. Wait till this fall.
Okay.
I mean, you're going to, it takes forever for them to germinate. And then it takes forever to form a root. You're not going to get any carrots until the middle of June. So it doesn't matter how cool it is now.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And that's what I was asking. How about that?
Dill is, you know, yeah.
I'm not growing it for seed. I just want some to sniff to go in a salad or on a deviled egg.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
you know?
That's right. And that's right. But it's going to go to seed quick, just like cilantro will. But yes, not quite as quick. And so you might have to plant more dill a little later on, but you'll get your dill. Dill will be pretty easy.
For the fall garden.
All right.
Thank you so much.
All right, Tara. It's good.
Mr. Bill.
You're welcome. Good to hear from you. So all of these things, that's it. So, Japanese magnolia variety. So, the Gresham hybrids, Dark Shadows is one. It can get pretty big. I've got to remember all of them. And the problem is we got to figure out which ones are available. So, I could tell you a bunch of varieties, but then I got to go see who's got what. But the Greshams are a little better because they get bigger. Than some of the others. So if you want something that's going to cast a lot of shade fast, some of the Greshams might be better. But there's a lot of others that are medium-sized that are also very nice. There's not any of the Japanese magnolias that are really bad for us. That's one of the nice parts. But give me a... Till next week, I'll come up with some varieties that you can buy rather than just something I can talk about. Hey, we're going to be back next week. I'm going to talk about magnolias when we come back and lots of other things. So tune in next week. Good to talk to y'all.
Waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to red dirt girls in a red